This is Metaphysical Universe, exploring science and spirituality with Dr. Douglas Kelly and Dr. Vicki Hunter.
And good evening and welcome for, what is it, Wednesday, January 9th, 2013. My name is Dr. Doug Kelly. So glad you could join us. Of course, I'm joined by Dr. Vicki Hunter.
Good evening, Doug. Poor Doug. Everybody should know this right off the top. Doug has pneumonia, and he is here anyway. It's awesome.
What dedication.
It is.
Actually, it's a touch of pneumonia, and it's not full-blown, but it's still...
Well, you're doing pretty well for having even a touch of pneumonia, Doug, but it's really good to be back. January 9th. Wow, we're still here, hey?
Yeah, what happened to the end of the world? I was so looking forward to it.
Overrated.
Yeah. Of course, we've been saying that for a year.
Yeah. Well, good evening, everybody. That's what we want to say.
And we hope to be joined by Dr. John Hightower screening calls for us tonight. He must be having some login issues, but I'm sure he'll join us presently. And all right, so we got some things to talk about. We'll chat about those in just a minute. We'll get through the some of the informational aspect of this program. Metaphysical Universe is a weekly service and educational program of the Metaphysical Church of Humanistic Science. Our mission is to explore and empower the human spirit, as well as to explore science and spirituality. In addition to this weekly radio program, MCHS Church also operates the Institute of Metaphysical Humanistic Science, a metaphysics school offering bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees in metaphysics with a number of specializations available, including spiritual counseling, life coaching, holistic healing, paranormal science, and several more. You can find more information about the Metaphysics Institute at metaphysicsinstitute.org. And we also started a second school here that we'll talk about in just a moment. But next on the program, we'll do our profession of beliefs, which Dr. Vicki is going to do for us.
We do indeed. The profession of beliefs. And we say this off the top of every show, and I'm going to take up this side for Doug tonight. The spiritual philosophy of MCHS Church is based upon 9 principles of belief. And these principles of belief are, 1, as sentient and evolving human beings, we not only believe in practicing and living by the principle do no harm, but also in the principle of do right, thus enhancing the vibrational level of humanity. 2, we believe in the indomitable spirit of power of the human spirit to ultimately triumph in the face of any dilemma. The answers we seek already exist within us. 3, we believe that we alone are responsible for and capable of solving human social problems, and we believe the roots of those solutions lie in exploring, understanding, and empowering the human condition. 4, we embrace the differences that make all human beings unique, recognizing that we all come from star material and are, therefore, equal, irrespective of heritage, beliefs, gender, or gender preference. One planet, one race, one ancestry, and one destiny. 5, rather than a supreme being, we recognize and honor the divine energy that exists in all living things. 6, we believe the nature of the human being, encompasses both a physical and spiritual aspect, and that human consciousness survives the death of the physical body in a coherent fashion. Thus, death opens a new chapter of life and conducts the individual into a higher state of existence. 7, we believe in self-acceptance, self-responsibility, and respect for free will, and that these 3 synergistically create the goal of self-completeness. 8, we believe in the value of practical education in metaphysics, metapsychology, and life skills as a means of empowering the human spirit and enhancing the human condition. We maintain an open but grounded mind to potential realities as yet undescribed by science. 9, we believe that discovering the true nature of consciousness and human existentialism will ultimately have a positive impact on human evolution and peaceful coexistence. So for more information on these principles of belief as well as MCHS Church, you can certainly visit mchschurch.org.
Thank you. Well done. And first time I haven't done it so long, but I don't want to walk through it.
I know. We have newageclass.com, so everybody should write that down. And feel free to visit newageclass.com. Now, it can be upper lowercase, all lowercase, whatever you like. Newageclass.com is where we have now moved all the freestanding courses with metaphysicsinstitute.org. And so basically, the degree students in the degree program will still remain with metaphysicsinstitute.org, IMHS. However, we have now created this separate site, which is in affiliation with IMHS, and it is open to the general public. Anybody can go on there and, of course, take any number of our really big roster of programs. And everything from, you know, as Doug said earlier off the top of the show, animal communication is now on. We have, the tarot course, and we have
Reiki,
you know,
versus paranormal, certified paranormal investigator courses.
Absolutely.
Certified leading paranormal investigator. There's Dr. Ingrid Irwin's new course on certified EVP technician. Fabulous course, and there's nothing else like it anywhere. And it's available there.
I am going to take that course. I'm excited to take that course, actually. So, Ingrid, you can expect me this year because it's one of the things that is on my list of to-dos. We were talking about this before the show that we don't necessarily believe in New Year's resolutions, but we do believe in goal setting. So Dr. Ingrid's new CPI course is exactly
CPT,
right.
Certified in EVP Tech. And just so everybody knows, you know, in this whole New Age class thing, it's, I mean, every day that you learn something new, you begin a new age for yourself. So this is a perfect place for those who really are not ready or don't want to enroll in the degree program. They can still take some of the different courses offered in the degree program on newageclass.com. It's an auxiliary of IMHS and of MCHS Church. It's an educational program of the church. And so courses are standalone. There's two types of courses. Some are certificate courses. They're a little less involved, less comprehensive, but still you get, you know, get what's stated there. But then there are the certification courses, which are more involved and include written assignments and so forth. And so there's several. We're going to be adding some more courses to it as we go here along the coming weeks and months too. So hopefully you will, those listening who want to take a certificate course or certification course, they can visit there. And then you were talking about New Year's resolutions versus New Year's goals.
Absolutely. I have a lot of goals. I'm going to take ballroom dancing this year. I have decided I'm going to do ballroom dancing. And I'm excited. I found out that there's two schools nearby me.
Wow.
So I'm going to do a little investigating. And, you know, even it's just one of those fun kinds of things, you know, that I think we all have to have a little bit of fun. And it's something I've wanted to do for decades, actually.
Well, that's what they say. Girls just want to have fun.
That's right. They do. And, of course, I'm very sincere to say this. Ingrid doesn't know this, but from the onset of Ingrid Irwin putting her course up on the IMHS, and then over now we have it at newageclass.com, I've said, I really want to take that course, and I want that certificate hanging up on my wall because I think I would like to, in keeping with what I do, I would like to get some credible, you know, substantiated kinds of investigating going of my own in paranormal research. I think it'd be great fun.
It's fascinating. You know, I've always said that of all the different evidence that we have for paranormal phenomena, that EVPs are the most compelling, the most meaningful, or they can be. There's a lot of them that are not really, they're more false positive, but there are a few that you just can't explain away. And so if you've taken the CPI course, I mean, you've gotten some training in doing EVP research and analysis, well, this is a natural augmentation to your CPI. because now you can really learn to take it way up a notch to a professional level. The thing I love about it is that you learn how the human voice operates through the mechanics of it. So in order for, if it's spoken by a human, you know, you've got the breathy sounds and you've got different things happening, and you'll learn to identify some of those different things and differentiate them from a presumed spirit voice. So it's a great course, and anybody who's serious about paranormal or anomalous research ought to take it, because it will really heighten your skills there. And there's some other courses too, so.
Well, for me, Doug, what it is I've been talking to dead people my whole life. And, you know, they're in my head, and I have these, you know, things that happen around me all the time. And I'd like to know, I've had clients return when I used to, because I don't tape readings for the reason that they usually don't work. They don't work around me. You get all the, you know, stuff.
Yeah.
And then people have said that they've heard voices on the tapes. Well, I've never collected that evidence. And now I've decided, well, this is the year I'm going to take on that challenge. So I think it's a natural in the work that I do. And so I'm ready to do that. So,
and,
you know,
we also have, I just want to really quickly mention, we also have the three Reiki courses, Reiki 1, 2, and 3, taught by Olga Nordstrom. So they're available there. And there's, as you already mentioned, animal communication and healing, taught by Dr. Gaynor D. Perez. And who am I missing anybody? Well, you've got your Native American spirituality on there. You've got your natural laws course on there. You're working
and
on
certified holistic tarot reading.
Yeah, that one too.
And level 2 is coming up by mid-February. It'll be posted. I am presently working on the metaphysical parenting course. So that, I feel, is a real bonus for people, whether you're a parent or work with children, or, you know, you're an educator. It's really beneficial to everybody. So it's a whole different view on being a guardian of children. So I'm looking forward to posting that one, too, by mid-February, I hope.
So
that's the intent.
Tonight our topic is consciousness and self-study, and basically we're going to get into how self-aware are you, do you know how you think, do you know how you learn and process information, how are your critical thinking skills, and all of this is really related to self-study or study of the self. And Vicki, you had, I'll take it away, you had some thoughts on this.
Doug, and by the way, for those who are listening, Doug is sitting in his Zen garden. You can hear the waterfall in the background. We were laughing. It could be, before the show, we were talking about it could be like a redneck bathroom.
That's my Zen garden, right? The toilet running. But it's not.
No, Doug seriously is, you know, outside sitting by his waterfall and doing some healing work on himself. So if, and you know, it's a good place to be, you know, in the point of, and Doug's doing this for himself in being self-aware. He had a feeling, I hope you don't mind me saying this, Doug.
Okay.
He just had a feeling something wasn't quite right and went to the doctor and of course did all the respective things. And it's like following that inner voice, that self-awareness. Because if you're aware of your body and how you feel, you know the difference between, geez, I just have a cold, or, geez, I have an infection. You know, or, I mean, and again, if you're tuned into yourself. Well, we take that all a step further in how do we think? How do we process information? And, you know, people have often asked me, Doug, you know, well, what is that? What do you mean by that? Well, you can begin by asking simple questions. To yourself, are you an experiential learner? Are you an auditory learner? Are you better with the written word? I mean, I've met people where it's hard to have a conversation with them, but if you write it down, they've got it in a second. You know?
Yeah.
And so there's people who, you know, and it's just different kinds of processing. This is consciousness. Awareness, self-awareness is consciousness. And, of course, we have varying levels of consciousness. So when we're aspiring to enlightenment, you know, if you want to use that word, you're aspiring to a greater state of consciousness, it all reduces down to one very important thing, which is self-awareness. How aware are you of yourself? This is a great learning tool, by the way. And Doug and I have talked about this at length for students in the school, that sometimes people have a hard time studying, and it can be an inhibitor because, you know, they're not good at the reading. So there's some kinds of skills that people can learn, such as reading it out loud. Read the information out loud so that you have an auditory experience, you have a participatory voice experience, and from there, again, you can start to, oh, self-observe. Oh, that's how I learn. That's how I can get it. Some people actually need to smell the words, taste the words, have an experience with the information that's there.
Sounds like you're saying getting to know yourself.
Totally. It's absolutely understanding how you work. I think, Doug, we live in a world where we're always occupied with things outside ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
We're interested in how do they think? What are they thinking about? What are they going to say next? Well, if you take that very same energy and say, oh, what am I thinking? What am I going to say next? How am I going to participate in this? Because that's power, right? That's ultimate power. So it's really about studying who you are, just getting down to that self-observation, if you will. And this takes us right into what we're going to talk about tonight, different, you know, critical thinking skills, because you can ask yourself, there's some really important things I'm often, you know, passing along to people. What do you hope to achieve by that? You know, it's like whenever I'm in a, generally it just kind of free flows with you, Doug, or free flows with myself, but we're all in situations at times where we have to push the pause button. We've talked about that before.
Mm-hmm.
And ask ourselves, well, geez, okay, how do I want to respond to this? And what do I hope to achieve by that? That is a critical thinking skill. But you're critically thinking about yourself and your interactions with others.
I have a few comments on critical thinking as well when you're done.
So this all lends to, you know, that the big bubble package of that self-study. There are literally thousands and thousands of self-help books out there. And they all say the same thing, everybody. They all say the same thing, just a different angle of it, is study yourself. Know who you are. Know how you process.
So, know why you are who you are.
You know, I very often just repeat this to myself and to share this with others. I am a free sovereign being of the universe visiting the earth.
Huh. Yeah. I'm not going to say anything about being sent here, imprisoned here.
But and in many ways, that's exactly what happens. You know, the soul.
For a while.
I believe this in an offbeat kind of way. If we think that the soul is a fragment of the universe and it's vast, endless, its capacities are immense, and then here we are, you know, come into the body, it has limitations.
Yeah. That physical vessel. So, let me talk about some of the critical thinking skills that I wanted to mention. This is more of a reminder than anything. This is one thing that I really try to teach in the IMHS degree program, is to think, well, critically, think actively, question everything. And it's so important that we as professionals do this. If you are a metaphysician or a student learning metaphysics, it is absolutely critical to think critically, to always have a defensible basis for what you believe. There's so much fringe speculation out in the metaphysical, the popular metaphysics world, that so many people will believe pretty much on blind faith. And that's something that you just can't afford to do. We're not going to get to the truth if everybody just believes what they're told. And you got to question it. You've got to make sure you have a defensible basis for what you believe. So, you know, and you have to, when we talk about critically thinking, you have to almost break it down, a particular belief. You have to break it down into its constituent parts, if you will. You know, it's the common denominator, or just keep reducing it so that you have a good understanding. And I'll give you an example. There's so many people out there, and I'm sure by mentioning this, it's going to get a lot of people's ire up, but the fact is the fact. A lot of people believe in the healing power of crystals, you know, various types of crystals for various types of things. And when I look at that, I'm thinking, are you telling me that a particular type of stone has some inherent ability to heal? Well, that's a tall order. I mean, that's just a tall order. Do I think that crystals work? Yeah, I do. But I believe that it is absolutely 100% the consciousness and intent given to those crystals by the practitioner that is responsible for any healing that goes on or any effect. And that concept is really hard for some folks to digest. They want to believe that these rocks are magical and have these abilities. And they're rocks. They're made of the same stuff that we're all made of, you know, in different measurements, if you will, in different parts. And so you really have to think critically. Is it really magic, or is it the power of human consciousness and intent to purpose that stone, that crystal, that whatever, into a particular area? And it really involves a lot of the power of belief, too. So whatever you believe in, that's fine. But just make sure that you can defend it, you know, challenge. We need people seeking truth and understanding the way things work. And in my mind, I could go out in my Zen garden here and grab a rock and intend it for some purpose, and it would work the same as anything else, you know, because of that power of consciousness, that power of belief, and also the power of belief on the part of the client. So,
you know, Doug,
go ahead.
There's been experiments with water.
Yeah.
That if you, and this is a beautiful kind of parallel to draw, that if you project energy into water, that water becomes more active. And gee, there's some wonderful videos on YouTube. For anybody who's interested about, you know, photography that's been done. And, you know, there's been lots of studies done on just projecting an energy into flowing water, stagnant water, and you can change the energy of it. You can change the frequency of it.
That's
so,
the power of consciousness, and that's such it's a much more elegant solution to why things work. And things. For example, you know, in some forms of Wicca, they cast spells. Well, you know, and they have to use certain ingredients for a particular spell. You know, really? I don't think so. I can go grab a handful of grass from my yard and do the same thing, because it's not the components in and of themselves. It's the intent born of consciousness, human consciousness, that focuses something. And, of course, these spells, for most Wiccans, are positive and upbuilding, and they're essentially another method of delivering deliberate intent to the universe. You can do the same thing with meditation, with simple focus, and they're just different methods of doing that deliberate intent.
We have to be clear that everything does have its properties. You know, I mean, if you mix oil and water, water is a property, oil is a property. You mix that and you get a different...
That's correct, but that's a physical...
And
you know,
but things also have energies. You mix things together, you get different energies. And two people together, you know, they either have a good chemistry or not a good chemistry, because it's an energy.
Right.
So, yes, there's different things that you can put together that create an energy, but it's not going to go anywhere or do anything unless you intend it to.
That's right. That's what I'm trying to say. It's not everything, obviously, is, I mean, Einstein proved that E is equal to MC squared. So if it's physical, it also has energy. It's the same thing. And so, yes, different things have different energies. That's absolutely true. And you can apply that just like you did to two people, the chemistry between two people. If you put your furniture in the room in a certain way, it has a certain energy about it. If you change it, it has a different energy about it. It's the way feng shui works. It's you go into a into somebody's home. It might have a positive energy to it. It might have a negative energy to it. You can pick up on this stuff. What's the vibe? You know, people can have the same thing. They have a positive vibe or a positive energy, or they have a negative vibe or a negative energy. And so the whole point of all of this is to understand things and how they work. That without human consciousness, really none of this stuff will work anything. You know, without human consciousness and that intent, that deliberate intent, you're not going to get very far.
Which is simply the awareness of it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and being able to project. You know, very often, you know, Doug, we've done meditations, we send out white lights to people, but that's a deliberate intent mm-hmm. to move that energy.
Right.
And in a particular kind of energy. You know, if you send, if you have a negative thought and you're feeling really angry and say, okay, I'm going to send a positive energy, it's likely going to be a negative because
mm-hmm.
your consciousness is negative. But if you can just zen out for a moment, you know, and go deep inside, mm-hmm. take a breath, picture a white light, then you can project that white light. So it's about consciousness is the simple awareness of things that we do all the time. We're just now becoming aware of it. We are now awakening to what already exists, which is the consciousness of energy.
Mm-hmm. Amen. That's what I've been trying to say. And so, you know, just be able to defend what you believe. You know, that's why, that's one of the reasons, what I'm talking about here is these critical thinking skills. It's one of the reasons why I neither believe nor disbelieve in reincarnation. We've had previous shows on this, several of them. And, you know, and I take a very objective look at reincarnation in the IMHS degree program. And it's very objective. And I state very clearly, you know, that I do not necessarily disbelieve in it, but I don't necessarily believe in it because I'm still looking for compelling evidence. And, you know, some people get really get their hackles up over this because it's almost like a religious thing. You know, you believe in reincarnation or you don't. And some people have, you know, memories. Vicki, you have memories of past lives. I don't. I don't have anything. So I can't go on that. What I'm really looking for is some kind of reasonable and rational and compelling evidence that it either exists or doesn't exist. So I have no real opinion on it. I can't buy into it, but I can't fully dismiss it.
This is the point of critical thinking and self-awareness, though, Doug, is no matter how I may view reincarnation from a linear point of view, if I take it a step further, and this, again, more awareness, the continual learning of our own consciousness, is to become also aware that not only do we have time in a linear fashion, we have it also in a perpendicular fashion. So then we have, you know, many layers of consciousness, many dimensions of time-space.
Mm-hmm.
So it could also be happening, the past lives could be happening simultaneous to this moment.
In different worlds, almost.
Absolutely. So I cannot... You know, I figured, well, we live in the human world, in this physical reality, so I'm good with seeing these memories that I have as past lives. But if I really think about the memory, if I go into the experience of the memory, it's kind of like remembering what I did yesterday. It's very real. But it can also be a memory is happening simultaneous to this moment.
So,
does that make sense?
So it leaves a lot of speculation open to what things are. I mean, if the many worlds theory is correct and there's an infinite number of parallel universes, then, you know, what's to say that we're not tied into each one of those in some way, you know, via human consciousness or, you know, more of a global consciousness. So there's a lot of speculation out there, and it's fascinating to think about and to ponder about and to ask what if. I mean, physical science, physics, quantum physics is really raising some great questions and some points that are really, you know, conundrums. I mean, how can this be? And so,
well, I think this is when we get stuck in a way of thinking. One of my pet peeves is when people say, I'm just built that way. That's just the way I am.
Yeah.
Okay, and how's that working for you? You know? And to me, that's an excuse to avoid the work. You know, I mean, I'm dyslexic, but what could I do? I go around the rest of my life and say I can't learn that because I'm dyslexic? That's a cop-out. You know, we have to be able to challenge ourselves to say, how can I expand my self-awareness? How can I learn more and understand how my mechanisms work and then work with it? You know, it's like, oh, I have a tendency to do this, so I compensate by doing that. And then I keep, you know, continually grow and evolve as a human being, but also a spirit and a body. So my soul is evolving as well as me and my consciousness as a human being is evolving. So that excuse about that's just the way I am or that's what I believe and that's all there is to it, it's a limited experience, and I don't buy it. So I think we have to peel back the layers all the time. We're always learning.
And that's part of learning about us and how we think and how we operate and what little lessons we might need to learn. There's opportunities for lessons all over the place, like in what we've been talking about with critical thinking and so forth. And by the way, these critical thinking skills are absolutely crucial for anyone in anomalous research, whether it's hauntings, parapsychology, paraanthropology, ufology, cryptozoology, any of them. They have to really think very objectively because, again, remember, we're not going to learn the truth if we just bow in or give in to our pet beliefs, our pet notions. And the question we always have to ask about anything in life is, what are the facts and what are those facts telling us? And if you want a quick little course, if you will, in deductive versus inductive thinking, you know, we try to think deductively. What are the facts and what are those facts telling us? And deductive thinking and reasoning simply means that if the premises are true, the conclusion is guaranteed to also be true. So if you have 2 and another 2 and you add a plus sign, 2 plus 2 equals 4. The premises are true. 2 is 2 is true. 2 is true. And so you add them together and you get a guaranteed conclusion. Well, inductive thinking is that if the premises are true, then the conclusion is likely to also be true, and that we use a lot in anomalous research. If we get an EVP that we cannot identify as human speech, then the conclusion, we have to come up with some sort of possible conclusions, one of which it's some entity not in our realm. So that's more of an inductive argument.
Well, let's take that into the human dynamic, Doug. That very principle applies to boy meets girl. And I'm going to speak from the female point of view. He is late for the date and he didn't call me. 2 plus 2. You know, but I want it to be okay. You know, I want to believe he didn't mean it. I want to believe. You see, there's
denial.
You know, because the action plus the action equals evidence.
Yeah, and that could be inductive too. It could indicate a likely explanation, but it's not necessarily guaranteed to be true because we can misread the situations all the time. So,
well, there's certain things about our own behavior that we can self-analyze. If I tend to like this and I tend to like that, I'm likely going to get this. You know, there are these, and then go into, you know what I mean? It's like you can take this right to the human level of self-study and the study of others and dynamic with people. So it's not just about the number 2 plus the number 2 equals 4. It's about a behavior plus a behavior equals a pattern.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
and if you can have those patterns, you can come up with a likely conclusion. And yet we will often deny that likely conclusion, you know, and we'll have cognitive dissonance on it.
So here's a little, you know, testimony. When I read for people, I have a high-functioning empathy. And so there's a difference between being psychic and doing a psychic reading versus being intuitive at the, you know, just the sensibility, because I'm a pattern freak. Doug's a pattern freak also. If somebody behaves this way and then makes that decision, the likely outcome is going to be blah, blah, blah. That's not being psychic, folks. That's being sensible. And and it's because I'm perceptive. I have a high-functioning perceptivity between people And it's that's not an ego talking, by the way. That's just being an honest, you know, I'm just confessing here that this, and I, but I'm very honest to tell people about this. And I hope to, in my work, teach people to see this for themselves. So it's that self-observation. If I am going to eat blah, 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 you know, every day for the next month, I'm very likely going to gain 10 pounds. But if I take one thing out of my diet every day, one small thing, like a scoop of ice cream, you know, every day for a month, I'm likely to lose X amount of pounds.
Mm-hmm.
You see? And this isn't about when somebody says, oh, can you tell me if I'm going to lose weight this month? I just don't even go there because it's ridiculous to even ask the question in the matter of the psychic world, because that's just your own self-responsibility world. That's your own self-observation, your self-responsibility, you know, and deciding what you want to do with yourself. So, and you know, a belief plus an action is going to have an outcome, and that's just sensible.
Mm-hmm.
Which is different from being psychic, which is there's no evidence that would support me to know what is happening ahead of time. And I just want to clarify that. If I have a feeling about something that's going to happen tonight, and I have no indicator, there's no physicality to give me a reading, then that is a psychic impression. But if I get to that party, I get to that event, and I have this feeling, I'm very likely going to be able to tell you that there's an energy here that I'm reading. And people with a high perceptivity, you know, can read that kind of energy in a room, which has nothing to do with being psychic. So I just want to make that clarification.
It takes
a long time, and it took me actually a couple of decades, Doug, to be able to pull that apart and decipher, because I was really obsessed with how do I do what I do. So there's, when you're talking earlier, it's what we want to believe. We want to believe that everything is psychic, or we want to believe that everything is just, you know, as the mentalists would say, is just...
Right.
It's what we want to believe can impede information.
Well, because we set up a bias, it's like a magnifying lens that changes, you know, what we see. And that's really the point. Everything we've been talking about is the point of humanistic science, and especially, you know, our brand, which is a human-centered philosophy, meaning be truthful, you know, don't put a bias in front of what you, you know, want to believe. I mean, we all want to believe certain things, but we've got to come a time when we become more objective, we understand that it is what it is. You know, our reality is our reality, but we also need to align that reality with the reality, the real, whatever that is, and make sure that we see things in their proper light without being colored by belief, you know, unreasonable belief. We have to make sure that we seek that truth, because, again, we'll never find it if we just stick to our pet beliefs without any defensible basis, without any reasonable and compelling basis. I mean, there's so many things that fall into this. In paranormal research, there's so many that believe that these orbs on pictures are ghosts and spirits. And, you know,
oh, you have so disappointed me so many times.
I know.
I sent you, Doug. Oh, I wanted to believe that was a picture of an orb. I was going to frame it.
Right.
And he says, Vicky, it's a refraction.
Yeah, or it's just, you know, airborne contaminants. But that's what the evidence suggests. I mean, I would love to believe that we're picking up pictures of entities or the energy from entities. And, you know, that whole argument how energy takes the spherical form because that's natural, it's physical. It makes so much sense. I would love to believe that. But the evidence doesn't suggest that. The evidence says that orbs came about largely with the advent of digital compact cameras, where the lens and the flash are close together, and so it lights up airborne contaminants, CPCs, you know, and so that's what the evidence says. And if I was to deny that, and so many do, there are academic doctors with books out that believe that these are interdimensional beings. And yet every argument that they offer to support that, I can tear it apart. Based on Occam's razor, you know, the simplest explanation is likely the correct one. And so we can't get anywhere if we automatically just assume that these orbs are spirits. Okay, and let's just assume for a moment that they are. Okay, so what? So we've got some cool pictures. Now, what does that tell us? What does it mean? What does it tell us about our life every day or where we're going? It doesn't tell us anything. And so you have to really look beyond it and keep reducing it, you know what I mean, tearing it apart, reducing it so that we can understand this stuff and find some answers. Otherwise, we stay stuck in essentially the dark ages. We stay stuck in what I call a flat earth mentality. We're not really willing to go over the horizon and see what's really there.
Own our stuff.
Yeah.
Just own our stuff. You know, this is probably 25 years ago when I was talking to a friend, and I had some things going on in my life at the time, and I said, geez, you know, I just don't believe my life. And this fellow says, well, maybe that's your problem. He says, you can't change what you don't believe. So, I mean, if the pattern you're in and the way you're thinking is right in your face, accept that that's what it is so that you can't, you know now what you're working with, and you can set a goal to change it. So, you know, it's like you have to, it's that self-acceptance thing or life acceptance, because everything has an energy, everything has the frequency, and we're putting that off. You know, sometimes it's very simple. I use this visual for picture. It's like life is this beautiful, you know, woven blanket, but there's one thread in there, you know, and if you put it under a black light, it's shining. You know, so you got to pull that thread out, because it's that thread that's different than everything else that it's attracting the garbage to your life. You know, so that's another point of self-observation. You know, it's that like attracts like, the power of, you know, magnetism and all that stuff. And but that's a process. And usually I say, never mind about that. Just look at yourself and see the evidence of your own thinking as it's been manifest in your life, and just go inside. You and I don't talk about this lightly, Doug. I mean, we've had to own a lot of our own garbage to be able to say this and teach it. I don't say it lightly. Life is tough. Then there's a lot of stuff, you know, in our ego and our pride and our, we think we knew something and then we don't. And geez, and we held on to that for a long time. But that's the evolution. That's the process of life. You know, you're aware of this yesterday, but you're aware of something different today. People say, well, what do you believe in, Vicki? I say, well, I don't know. I can tell you what I believe in today, but next week I might have a whole bunch of new stuff and I'll tell you something different, because nothing is absolute.
Oh, it's evolution, though.
Totally evolution. So it's, you know, just see the evidence of the self, and, you know, and if the blanket helps, use it. You know, you are this wonderfully woven, you know, complex, simple yet beautiful being, and yet there's something that's not working for you. Okay, shine a black light on that sucker and pull it out. You know, because once it's out, it doesn't have anything to, you know, there's no attraction, there's nothing there. So then you go back to your blanket. Now there might be something else in there, but this is what we continually learn. And I don't care how old you get, I don't care what you think you know. You know, I had a conversation with somebody yesterday, Doug, who is doing a lot of work with a healer, and the healer got upset and had a temper tantrum. So this woman is saying, well, geez, should I be patient? Should I be? I say, well, I don't think the healer's really a healer.
Yeah.
You know, or let's just say the healing is limited. Because this is where, if you're going to profess something and you're going to be a part of something, then see it for what it is, and it's not all that it's cracked up to be. So use your critical thinking skills and take yourself the next step further. And that's not to judge, criticize, or, you know, be negative about where you've been. So what? Or who's out there? Just make it nice.
You were blanking out there just a little bit. Well, you know, speaking of how self-aware are you, do you know how you think in some of these topics we're talking about tonight, you know, that's, again, to go into yourself and examine, how am I looking at this particular situation? How am I thinking about it? What thoughts do I have? Are those thoughts rational thoughts, or are they filled with emotion? You know, there's so many lessons between the lines. I tell my students all this all the time. Look for the lessons between the lines. And some of those common lessons are not reading the instructions carefully, not reading any exam questions carefully, and the answers carefully enough, and skimming over things and not paying close enough attention. That's one lesson between the lines. Another one is when, you know, a student may miss something and automatically, well, you know, that exam was stupid or it wasn't well written or whatever. But rather than saying, okay, what did I not get about this? What did I miss? Learn the lessons between the lines. If you have relationships that are not all that healthy, what are the lessons that that relationship's trying to teach you? The universe is trying to teach you something here. You know, what are the facts and what do those facts tell us? It can be facts of a relationship. If it's not healthy, why? Is it partly your problem? Well, you know, what do you add to the relationship? What do you subtract from the relationship? What does the other person add? What do they subtract? Make sure that you are not taking more from a relationship than you're adding. Those are learning how you think, learning how, just becoming more self-aware of your own process. Are you in denial about some things? Be honest about it. And we should probably address, you know, how you learn and process information. I know you started to earlier on. Are you still with me, Vicki?
I am so.
Oh, great.
I was thinking, just to add to what you're saying, is the word value. Ask yourself, what's the value? What is the value of the experience? What is the value of what you're doing? What's the value of your energy? What's the value of what you're getting back? So that question of value, you know, it's very, very important to consider. Everything has an energy, and that energy has a value. So know where it is you're putting it. You know, the processing, it's one of my favorite topics about how to process. Excuse me. Because I'm a borderline dyslexic, and I had to relearn reading. Yeah, you know, after I finished high school and I was obsessed with becoming a writer, I took it, again, peeling those layers, I took it to many varying degrees forward about the different ways of seeing the world. And then I had three children, one who is also borderline dyslexic. My second child is auditory memory delay. I'll explain that in a minute. And then I have another child who is a short-term memory delay. And what this means is that there are gifts that are overshadowed by what looks like a deficiency. So hear me again, everybody. These are not, you know, disabilities. They're actually abilities. It means that just because you don't fit into the so-called norm of society in how you think and process doesn't mean there's something wrong with you. It just means you have to look a little bit further for what is right with you. So sorry, Doug, you were going to say something?
Good point. That's all I said.
Yeah. Because I'm borderline dyslexic, I have to be very observant about my eyes skipping a beat, because it's called a rapid eye movement, and how the flutter of information transfers to my brain. So I have to make sure that I'm not tired when I'm learning and such. But what it is, it made me very sensory. I'm a real high sensory learner. If you tell me something, it's like a photographic memory. Now, I may not get it all in the right order, but the feelings behind it, because I'm an empath, the feelings are impressed and forever remembered. People have often said, Vicki, you don't forget anything. Number one, I think we're not supposed to forget things. I think they're supposed to assimilate into our experience, so we're learning. But it's just that I have this kind of photographic memory for feelings. If I weren't dyslexic in my linear view of things, then I wouldn't have that gift. Now, the auditory memory delay, how that managed, I could say a whole paragraph to my daughter, and she would only remember one line, because she couldn't process the hearing through to her thinking quickly enough, so she'd isolate one thought because she'd feel stressed. And so what I learned in communicating is to take one sentence and one thought at a time. What a great thing to make me slow down. But she's very conceptual. She's also very empathetic. And as she got older, you know, she could speed up her auditory process. But she likes things to go at a certain tempo, a certain pace. And she has taught me a lot about processing and how we all need to just slow it down a little bit. Now, my son having short-term memory delay, how that goes to a flaw is that if you force him to answer a question right now, he'll make something up because it causes so much stress. He needs that extra time to process things. So again, I learned patience. And what he is, he could tell you what you were wearing last Wednesday at 3 o'clock and then how you poured your coffee because he has that kind of photographic memory, but don't ask him what he had for breakfast. So interesting about time space. Now, if we take these kinds of considerations into self-observing, because there's many more, there's lists of different ways to see things, then it's just, you can work with these kinds of abilities. You have heightened abilities in some other area that you've always thought was a disability. So what I say is if we are natural learners, we are experiential and we access all the senses. We access sight, sound, touch, taste, smell. So when you are reading something, for example, and it has everything has some kind of feel for it. I don't relate to anything scientific, by the way. It's just dry, flat, and I will not remember one thing off that page. It's just a waste of time. So what I have to do is transfer it into a visual and imagine that I'm experiencing it. So I can smell, you know, and I can put a number on a blackboard, for instance, or I can create different visuals that have me retain the information. Otherwise, I don't get it. So when you're an experiential learner, you don't necessarily have to go out and hug a tree. You can image yourself hugging the tree. You can image the smell of flowers. You can image a 3-4-dimensional kind of experience in your own mind that will help you to retain the information. Now, I can't stress enough how important it would be, and hopefully it's not bugging to anybody else, but to read information out loud. Even in my writing, I find that if I read it out loud to myself back what I've just written, I go, oh, crap, that doesn't make any sense. You know, so I have to go back and very often just rearrange a couple of sentences because what is there is substantial. It's just not ordered properly. That would be coherent in a delivery. So the same thing is if you are, let's say, you would naturally, the last point in a paragraph has more impact on you than the first part of the paragraph, then read it in a way that goes backwards and then forwards. So you can reverse your own process so that the information sticks. So there's very many different kinds of learning skills to help you to retain information and begin to assimilate it into your understanding, your unique view of life. So I hope some of that information helps people, and because I could go on for days about this, Doug, but that's just kind of giving an encapsulated approach to learning.
Well, those are good points, and you know, we're talking about how you think, how you learn, and another thing that comes to mind on those is that there are behavioral profiles out there, and students take a couple of them in the Metaphysics Institute degree program. But one of the common behavioral profiles out there is the Myers-Briggs. There's several. There's the DISC. There's the SELF. There's several of them. And I developed one several years ago, too. But one of the things that they do is you can't categorize human behavior. We're just too different. But you can kind of get some general behaviors that fall into basically four different quadrants. One of them I'll start with the director quadrant. You know, directors like it short and sweet. They're good decision makers. They're very direct in what they say, sometimes so much so that they can be abrupt. Directors, you know, just give me the facts, just the facts. Don't give me all a long dialogue. Just tell me what it is. Let's get on it. Let's make it happen. Go, go, go. So that's a director style of thinking. They want it, you know, don't beat around the bush with them. They don't want that. Then you have the analyzer or the analytical, which their motto is basically can't get enough info, more info. I mean, they will get some information, they will calculate it, extrapolate it, think about it, ponder it, and then they'll get more information and do the same again. And they take a long time making decisions because they never think they have enough data to make the right decision, and they're always worried that they'll make the wrong one. You find a lot of engineers in this category, a lot of scientists in this category. And by the way, in the director category, you'll find a lot of managers and entrepreneurs and business leaders, that sort of thing. So those are two of the styles. Another one is the what I call the empathizer. You know, very kindly hearted people will help you out with anything, and they can also be rather passive. You can walk on them easily, or the directors can, and others that can be walked on. They have kind hearts, but they often get hurt. And so that's the empathizer. Where do you find them? In nursing, healthcare type professions. The fourth one is often called a socializer, or what I call an interactor. They're very sociable people. I mean, they could strike up a conversation with a brick wall. And, you know, they're very often very jolly, gregarious, laugh a lot. You know, they're very friendly with people. On the downside, the negatives, they can be very disorganized, not able to get anywhere on time, cluttered workspace, and so forth. And they're not detail-oriented whatsoever, not like they're the opposite of the analytical. So how you think can be categorized, and if you see yourself in some of those, then you want to work on the opposite of that. So if you have a problem being prompt, you want to try to get there on time, set your clock a little ahead, or you know, just try to be there 5 minutes early, get in the habit. And the same goes with all the other quadrants. You can do that. So there's a number of ways that we can really learn about how we think, learn about how we learn, and get to know ourselves. That's the point of self-study, study of the self.
And which has to do with consciousness, everything to do with consciousness.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, we're in the Aquarian age, Doug, and it's all about renewed consciousness and connecting with one another in different ways, but yet connect with yourself. And, you know, who am I? And how am I doing this, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so that you know how to find options for other solutions to interact with the world. This is an exciting time. We're off to a good start in 2013, and I look forward to this year immensely. So thanks so much, Doug Kelly.
Well, thank you as well, and thanks for being part of this. And we thank those who listened to us tonight live, as well as those listening to the archives. Thanks to Dr. John Hightower for screening calls. If you have a topic you'd like to hear us address, send it to admin@mchschurch.org. If you'd like to get your degree in metaphysics, visit metaphysicsinstitute.org. Or if you'd like to take a standalone certificate or certification course, visit our new sister site at newageclass.com. We'll be back next week with another topic. We'll post that on the website once we've determined it. Hope to see you back next week. Tell others about the show and the program, and if you like what you're hearing. So that's all I got. Everybody, remember to listen, think, learn, grow, and live always. Have a great week.
Good night.